This video was made possible thanks to your support on Patreon. Subscribe on Patreon for early access to videos and additional content. Denmark is probably most famous for its colourful, crooked houses, the creation of one of the most successful toy brands, Lego, and for its stunningly beautiful landscape. But what you are probably unfamiliar with is the shocking and sensationalised cold cases that are virtually unknown to anyone outside of the country. In today's episode of Cold Case Detective, we'll be exploring two puzzling, unsolved mysteries from Denmark. Louise Borglet. One of Denmark's most heartbreaking cases is that of Louise Borglet. In late 2016, Louise was 32 years old and 7 months pregnant with her first child. She was not in a relationship with the baby's father and had chosen to move from Copenhagen to Herlev when she discovered that she was pregnant. Here, Louise shared an apartment with her sister Suzanne, her brother-in-law Martin, their two children, and their dog, an 8-year-old golden retriever named Maggie. A beauty advisor at a high-end department store, Louise was voted best colleague by her co-workers in 2015. Loved ones described her as fun, easygoing, happy, and humble. She affectionately referred to her unborn baby, who she found out was to be a boy, as Little P. Very little is publicly known about the baby's father, adding another layer of mystery to Louise's strange case. At around 6:30 p.m. on the evening of Friday, November 4th, 2016, a heavily pregnant Louise ventured out in the rain and cold to walk Maggie. Before leaving the family home, she pulled on her brother-in-law's olive green rain clothing, consisting of trousers and a hooded jacket, as well as his blue rubber boots. She said goodbye to her sister and headed 5 minutes down the road to the local dog park, where she and Maggie walked in peace, enjoying the cool night air. At around 7:10 p.m, a couple out walking their own dog were surprised to see Maggie bounding toward them, her leash dragging in the wet grass behind her. The pair felt that the canine wanted to show them something, so they followed her to the body of Louise. She looked still and pale in the darkness, and according to several Danish media outlets, she was lying, quote, like a cross, her arms outstretched at either side. When the couple reached for Louise, they realized her body was limp. The man, Michael, a 52-year-old tire fitter, immediately started performing CPR, while his partner dialed the number for emergency services. Just minutes after the paramedics arrived on the scene, Louise was sadly pronounced dead. She had suffered a puncture wound to one of her breasts and another to her ribcage. In the immediate aftermath of the crime, authorities propped up a tent over the crime scene and began to collect tracks in the wet grass. Maggie was also examined, and her fur was tested for any trace of DNA evidence. Law enforcement combed through several lakes in the area, searching for the murder weapon, which is believed to be a knife, but their efforts proved fruitless. Soon, witnesses began to come forward. At around 7 p.m, witnesses heard two screams coming from the park. One was short, one was long. The same witness then nearly collided with a man fleeing the park. Upon seeing them, the man threw his hands up in the air, possibly in despair or frustration, before turning around and heading back into the park. The man was described as being between the ages of 28 and 30, 5 foot 10 inches, of a thin build, with a thin, defined face, which some publications have described as marked, although it's unclear what exactly this means. Another unclear detail about the man is he reportedly had, and I quote, golden skin. This means he could be tanned, have an olive complexion, or perhaps his skin just appeared yellow-tinged beneath the street lamps. The man was wearing a black jacket with the hood up and a black cap underneath, dark trousers, and a leisure sweatshirt. 1 year after the crime, authorities released CCTV footage that featured the man. Unfortunately, the video is blurry, dark, and brief, and the footage is from quite a distance, making it difficult to tell anything really about the possible suspect. A month later, in December, a red bike found near the scene of the crime with a black baby seat attached was thought to possibly be connected to the crime. Authorities appealed to the public, asking whoever the owner was to come forward. They did, but it turned out that the bike had been stolen sometime before Louise's demise, but the owner did not report it as missing because she didn't have insurance. Once more, police were back at square one. As Louise was a well-liked woman with no known enemies, authorities eventually realized she was the victim of a random act of violence. They believed a mentally disturbed individual attacked her for no reason, other than that she was in the wrong place at the wrong time. There were simply no other motives they could find, or suspects in her personal life. They have also, however, not ruled out any other theories just yet. It does not appear that Louise's autopsy results were ever made public. In 2018, a peer review began, which involved expert police investigators from other districts taking a look at the case. Authorities announced that they were retracing all of their steps, and they even took 8 highly trained sniffer dogs back to the park to see if they could turn up new evidence or leads. In December that year, a knife was found in a stream less than a mile from the crime scene. At that time, it was believed to be the murder weapon, although so far, it's unclear if this was ever actually confirmed. While there isn't a huge amount of information available in Louise's case, online sleuths have an abundance of theories and questions. Many have asked whether it's possible that Louise was mistaken for somebody else, possibly her brother-in-law, since she was wearing his rain clothing. Others, however, have argued it's unlikely someone would memorize someone else's clothing and that green rainwear is hardly unique. It's also been suggested that perhaps Louise quietly went to meet someone at the park without letting anyone else know. Others have speculated that maybe her case is linked with that of 17-year-old Emily Meng. She went missing just 4 months prior. Her body was found in December of 2016, and her murder is still unsolved. Other theories in Louise's case suggest that it was a robbery gone wrong, or that the baby's father is involved. To this day, little is known about the father. According to one report, not even Louise's sister was aware of his identity. It seemed that neither party wanted him to be involved with the baby's upbringing. Tragically, Louise's case is still unsolved. If it really was a random act of violence, then it's unlikely we will ever see the perpetrator brought to justice unless they confess or fresh evidence is uncovered. Marie Locke Hansen. Born on June 13th of 1924, Marie Rode Madsen did not have the easiest time growing up. Her family had lived in poverty for generations, and she grew up in a rural farming area in the village of Lisbjerg, located in the second biggest city of Denmark, called Aarhus. She was one of 6 children, but 2 of her brothers died at a young age. One of her sisters reportedly passed away on Christmas Eve of 1931, while another followed 13 years later. Her father also died when she was just 7 years old. Clever and determined, Marie sought to achieve more than the life her parents and siblings lived. She was the first one in her family to take the exam in high school, which would allow her to enter university. As a young adult, Marie worked a handful of different jobs, including a proofreader, telephone operator, and office assistant. In the early 1940s, she met her first husband. The couple married in 1946, but later split up, ultimately divorcing in 1952. Between 1949 and 1950, Marie was employed by an engineering company to serve as a secretary to one of the owners, a man named Oscar Locke Hansen, who also worked as a teacher at an engineering school and was 10 years her senior. It wasn't long before the couple grew interested in one another romantically. They married in 1953. In the early 60s, the couple moved to the suburb of Hoybiya with Oscar's adopted daughter, Lisbeth. Around this same time, Oscar sold his share of his engineering company and began teaching full-time. Together, the pair lived a more than comfortable life. Marie became a housewife who spent most of her time cleaning and cooking, but for something to do while Oscar was working, she began running a photocopying business from the basement of their villa. Her husband and his colleagues were her main customers, but she occasionally took on business from strangers too. On the morning of November 10th, 1967, Oscar left for work at around 9 a.m. Shortly afterwards, Marie enlisted the help of her neighbour, a woman named Lizzie Christensen, as she was running behind with her workload. At 10 a.m, the couple's maid, Irma Rasmussen, arrived at the home. She worked part-time for the pair, assisting Marie in the day-to-day chores of cleaning and tidying. Marie and Irma had their own routine, where they'd clean for just shy of an hour before stopping for a coffee break. November 10th was no different. The two women invited Lizzie to join them at 10:50 a.m, but she refused, opting to continue working instead. Just as Marie and Irma sat down, the door went. Irma listened as Marie answered the door, hearing her employer say something along the lines of, quote, "make it quick." Marie told the customer she was busy, but could fit them in if their exchange was brief. Irma watched as a man followed Marie into her office. They closed the door behind them. Just moments later, however, things took a turn when Marie cried out, "oh no," before beginning to scream, and gunshots rang out. Irma ran to Marie's aid, but came face to face with the killer, who drew his gun from his pocket and fired once into her abdomen. Irma fell to the floor, and the man told her to stay calm before he left. Lizzie, startled by the noises coming from upstairs, shouted up to the other women, asking what was going on. Irma replied that she and Marie had been shot. Acting quickly, Lizzie ran out the basement door to a neighbor's house so that she could call for help. On her way there, she reportedly saw a man calmly walking past on the street. This man is widely believed to have been the killer. Meanwhile, Irma crawled to the front door and made it to the front of the villa where she screamed for help. A nearby gardener rushed to the aid of the victims. Inside the house, he found the body of Marie. She had been shot 3 times. Irma, however, was much luckier. She survived her single gunshot wound and spent the next several decades of her life attempting to bring Marie's killer to justice. She reportedly had a photographic memory and was dubbed by authorities as one of the best witnesses they'd ever worked with. During her remaining lifetime, she looked at hundreds, if not thousands, of photographs, giving law enforcement detailed reasons as to why the man in the photo was not the man who had shot her and Marie on that devastating day. Irma described the man to authorities as being between the ages of 35 and 40, wearing a dark blue or black coat, a hat and glasses, and carrying a briefcase. The description of this man matches the description of the one seen by Lizzie when she ran for help. Using this description, authorities had a newspaper cartoonist make a composite sketch of the man. However, Irma didn't think the man resembled the culprit well enough, and so the drawing was never made public until 2006. Shortly after arriving on the scene, authorities put up roadblocks and took a team of sniffer dogs into the woods behind the couple's house. A man in a blue coat who was sitting in his car on a road in the forest was arrested, but was released after several hours. In the aftermath of the shooting, several other witnesses came forward. There were alleged sightings of the culprit getting onto a bus that was heading into the center of the city, while several other members of the public saw a man fitting the description of the perpetrator getting into a green Morris Mascot, also known as a Mini Cooper, a short distance away from the house. One of these witnesses was a butcher, while another was a driving instructor. The driving instructor was in her car, with her name written on the side of her vehicle. Oddly, just days after the incident, her mother-in-law received a phone call where a person said, quote, "I think we both know about the shooting in Hoybia." The caller believed they were speaking with the driving instructor. However, this strange call brought the investigation no further forward. The murder weapon was determined to be a Walther P-38 pistol, which was a German World War II-era weapon and one of the most common handguns in Denmark at the time. The ammunition, however, provided local law enforcement with much more interesting information. The bullets were, at the time, mostly used by West German police officers. Around 2,000 pieces were imported to Denmark, 1,500 of which were sold to the Danish military. The remaining 500 pieces were sold to a shop in Copenhagen, which kept records of its sales. Unfortunately, despite this, authorities were unable to identify the perpetrator by use of these records. More interestingly still, the ammo which was sold to the military was given to officers with P-38s who were carrying out service in Greenland. Those who were dispatched to Greenland were first trained at a military base near the Lochhansen's villa. Other than the witness sightings and the murder weapon, the Danish police didn't have much to go on. Although 40 detectives were assigned to Marie's case, they were mostly inexperienced due to the low crime rate in the area. The crime scene was reportedly never secured, and according to some sources, key witnesses were never interviewed in depth. The murder of Marie Lochhansen is one of Denmark's biggest and most mysterious unsolved crimes. Over the decades, 20,000 people have been questioned, and police have spent over 100,000 hours investigating the grisly crime. And yet, no arrests have ever been made, no charges ever brought, and Marie's case largely remains cold. But although a lack of solid evidence appears to be a prominent hurdle in the case, the investigation has many theories and several compelling suspects. In February of 1967, just months before Marie's death, a man named Christian Andersen was found dead in his apartment in Sonneberg, about 2 hours from Marie. Andersen was 71 years old and owned an antique shop and was well known for flaunting his wealth, especially down at the local pub where he would often make a display of his plump wallet. It's for this very reason that, when authorities found him beaten and missing his wallet, they suspected it was a case of robbery gone wrong. When they later found his name in one of Marie's notebooks along with his phone number, they dismissed this, believing it was simply because the young woman had purchased goods from him before his passing. It has been rumored, however, that the two were involved with much more sinister dealings than the exchange of goods and services. In 1976, a man named Frede Müller was convicted of spying for East Germany. Müller was known as a friend and associate of Andersen's. This has led many to speculate that perhaps all three were involved in some sort of espionage. However, Müller passed away shortly after his conviction, so it's unknown if Andersen was a spy or whether or not Marie was ever involved in their activities. Many of the theories from this point on involve Oscar, an odd marriage contract, and the witness sightings of the green Morris Mini. It is widely reported that following Marie's demise, Oscar told the media that the couple had a happy and fulfilling marriage. However, according to friends, family, and law enforcement, this was not the case, and the marriage was tense, verging on the edge of a breakdown. Reportedly, Marie had met somebody else, although one article mentions that no trace of another lover was ever found. In recent months, the couple had come up with a contract that, in case of divorce, Marie would get everything, including the villa and all of her husband's wealth. While the contract had been signed by both parties, it would only be valid after it had been registered in a court proceeding. This registration was allegedly meant to take place on the day of Marie's passing. While it is unclear why Oscar would agree to such a bizarre document, online sleuths have suggested that perhaps Marie wanted it drawn up because she found out that he was having an affair. not the other way around. To secure her own future and financial stability, she demanded that the contract be made and validated. It has also been noted that Oscar was a rather heavy drinker in the years before Marie's death. It's possible she was worried he would eventually become reckless with the money. For his part, Oscar was said to be heartbroken after losing Marie. Upon hearing of her demise and reaching the villa, he collapsed to the floor, crying, and said, "They killed her." In the aftermath of the tragedy, he leaned more heavily on the drink, becoming a full-blown alcoholic and eventually passing away in the 1980s. He never remarried. Some have said he died of a broken heart. Despite Oscar's heartbreak, his statement of "they killed her" at the crime scene as he broke down is curious, if nothing else, making it sound like he knew more than he was letting on. It's been theorized that perhaps Oscar went to visit his lawyer to find out how he could get out of the contract, but his lawyer told him there was nothing he could do. Following this, Oscar's lawyer decided to visit Marie for himself and have a word. Maybe he planned on attempting to bargain with her on behalf of his client. Instead, he ended up shooting her. The lawyer, who was a very high-profile one at the time, reportedly told authorities that his car had been stolen just days before the murder. The car was a green Morris Mini. It was eventually located, but authorities deemed that the vehicle had nothing to do with the crime. This lawyer also had a watertight alibi, as he was away in the United States at the time of the murder. While he was away, his client's affairs were handled by his business partner, Hugo Schmidt, whose description matched the one Irma gave of the perpetrator. He was 39 at the time of the crime, owned a P38 pistol, and had access to the Morris Mini, which was always left in the office car park. While the gun was test-fired, it was found to not be a match to the murder weapon. Despite this piece of information, many still believe that either one or both of the lawyers were involved in the crime. In recent years, the couple's odd contract was located by authorities. Attached to it was a note, which said it should not be given to the police. It was signed with initials matching those of Hugo Schmidt. Irma told authorities that while Schmidt looked similar to the killer, he was not the same man. As for the first lawyer, it appears that Irma never met him, but the pair did speak over the phone. Another major theory in Marie's case is that she was murdered by a man for attempting to disinherit his son. In 1947, Oscar found out that he was infertile, which was strange since his wife had already birthed him a son named Steen. On the back of this knowledge, he found out that his first wife, Vera, had been having an affair with a politician and friend of his named Jorgen Peter Andersson. The couple divorced, but Oscar agreed to keep up the pretense that Steen was his true son. Otherwise, he would face embarrassment and public scrutiny. Following the pair's split, Steen continued to live with his mother instead of his father, but upon Oscar's death, would still be entitled to his estate, along with Lisbeth. However, if Marie and Oscar's contract went through, then Steen and Lisbeth would essentially be disinherited. Many have suggested the idea that Jorgen either killed Marie himself, or had a hitman do it for him. If a professional was involved in the murder, it could explain why it was so clean, and explain why Marie was so specifically targeted. It appears that Irma was only shot for getting in the perpetrator's way, but that they did not intend on harming anyone else other than their target. It has also been speculated that perhaps this was the work of a hitman, but that they took the life of the wrong person. This links to the final theory in Marie's case, that it was a case of mistaken identity. Some have noticed how similar Marie looked to a Danish traitor named Greta Bartram, a woman who worked as an agent and informant for the Gestapo during the war. In the years following the crime, Irma reportedly ran into the perpetrator twice more, once in a shopping center and once outside of a building. On both occasions, the man was allegedly gone by the time authorities arrived, However, neither Irma's children nor authorities have ever confirmed these sightings. Shortly before her death, aged 87 in 2003, Irma was shown two further photos of potential suspects, but neither was the man she'd seen on November 10th of 1967. In fact, she told authorities they had already shown her one of the photos before, and indeed they had, way back in 1968. Over the decades, dozens of journalists and authors have covered Marie's case. A multitude of books, documentaries, and articles have been created about it, but none have ever led authorities any closer to solving it once and for all. It was such a shocking and sensational case that it was dubbed the murder case that won't die. With the years moving on, it sadly seems likely that we will never see the case resolved. And there you have the facts. Please leave a comment down below with your own theories and speculations, and remember to like this video and subscribe to support the channel. You can also support us on Patreon for the opportunity to have your hometown featured in an episode of Cold Case Detective. Thank you for watching. Stay alert, stay safe, and I'll see you next time.